Welcome to the Spurs News Podcast, your home for all things Tottenham Hotspur. Now, here are your hosts.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
Hello everybody and welcome to a new episode of the Spurs News Podcast. I am Sam. Joining me to discuss the fun and frolics of all things Tottenham Hotspur, it's Stefan.
Hey buddy, I'd ask how you are, but I feel like the introduction may have set the tone for the podcast quite nicely.
It did, yes it did. Hello darkness, my old friend, it's good to see you again. Yes, it is very much, I'm not in a good way. I'm not good.
What's that? Top four's in our own hands? I don't think so.
No. We're going to get into this because I'm blaming you, by the way. I am completely blaming you. So I've lured you into this podcast. I've not mentioned it. And then we're live and I'm just going to lay into you for this.
That's fair. My betting predictions, as we know at the moment, are awful. And I decided to tell you what I think the amount of points total we'd get.
Yep.
Between now and the end of the season, and I'm now genuinely scared.
You not only did that, as everybody
with
will
so
know,
much confidence,
as everybody will know who's been following football this season, is the Champions League is being reformatted next year. With that reformatting, the coefficient of different nations would allow them to have an additional Champions League place. So fifth place in England potentially could be Champions League.
So for this, isn't that brilliant? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Sort of way that they're doing the Champions League.
All of that aside, because that's a different conversation. All this week, I've been quite focused on that because I thought, okay, let's learn what this means. Because coefficient wise, England aren't up there at the moment. We're third. That's behind Italy and Germany. But then the fixtures last week were kind of important because an English club were playing a German club in the Europa League in West Ham, and West Ham spanked them, and therefore we took the points and went into the next round. Germany dropped, and we went above them on the coefficient. Now, that meant that there was another game featuring a German side where if they'd lost Bayer Leverkusen, who are very much my German team right now for reasons I won't go into, if they had lost and they were losing to the good old team of Carrier Bag, which all Tottenham fans will remember, right up until the dying moments, and then they equalised and won it in injury time.
In that 4 minutes of injury time, that was
which,
mental.
Which, by the way, is like the fifth time they've done that. So it's clearly a strong mentality they've built there, which is great. But they, so if they had lost that, then we'd have been cemented. It would have been like 99.9% certain the fifth place would have been. So I was relaying this information to our group chat, letting everybody know, and I got lectured by somebody who told me that, don't worry about fifth spot, don't worry about that, we should be focused on fourth for third. Steph, that was you who handed down this lecture to me.
Yeah, no, I did mention that we were going to absolutely spank a little town in Birmingham. And we did, in fairness, we did. What I didn't expect is to then get spanked by a little town in London. I was very, very confident, I'm aware. And I think I did tell you, you were obsessing with fifth place.
You did? You lectured my ass. How? You said I should stop and it was boring and you said I smelt funny. I remember it clearly.
I don't think I said it was boring. I was quite interested in the whole how it works. At the time, I was very confident of,
can
you know.
Can you remember why I said I wasn't confident? Can you remember the exact words I said?
I think it was something to do with the next fixture.
And did I say something along the lines of, we've been awfully inconsistent in performance, and I feel Fulham at home are a good side. And my worry is that off the back of beating Aston Villa, we're going to show up and not actually show up.
And unfortunately, I don't think we even showed up.
Yeah, there. So, look, we got the Fulham game to talk about. I don't overly like diving into horrific defeats at times because it's like pouring salt on a wound. We are all Tottenham fans. We're all suffering a bit off the back of it. So what my aim to do today is do a little bit of kind of... We are going to have to talk about it because it's just a bit like, ugh, why on the earth does this keep happening? But we're actually going to open the show by handing it over to the comments and questions that have been sent in, because too often I forget to do that. And
we answer all the questions and then go, question. John,
I am trying to get into the better habit of not doing that. Trying is the operative word because I often still forget. So let's end the show over now.
Now it's time for your comments from our social media.
Okay, we're going to open on Facebook because that's where we got the majority. And then we do have one from Instagram this week. So on Facebook, we're going to open with a comment from Pete Thompson. Pete says, "Hi guys, hope you're all doing well. It's a shame about the weekend, but this seems to be a recurring theme. Where does this come from, as over the years, whenever we've had a good opportunity, we squander it? I'm certain this can't be down to the players, as this has been going on much longer than the current crop. Anyway, win, lose, or draw, I'll keep putting myself through the roller coaster of emotions. Come on, you Spurs." Pete's attitude there is pretty much nailed on to where I'm at, which is, man, this is annoying, but I still love you. So that's kind of where my head's
at. That seems to be the mentality you have to have if you are a Tottenham fan.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think football fandom in general, you're kind of strapped in and hoping that you'll one day have that wonderful feeling of more shocked when you lose than more shocked when you win 4-0.
Well, yeah, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Because it's realised, like, you know, football fandom is something that is so... It's so kind of like passionate and so loyal and everything else.
Yeah.
Yet 9 times out of 10, you haven't actually chosen to support that team. It's kind of been put upon you by, you know, a relative or something like that. Amazing how something you have so little choice over could have such a hold over your life.
We
have a crap performance on against Fulham, and I'm in a bad mood for the whole weekend, and the rest of the family is suffering because I'm sulking.
Yeah.
And I didn't even really choose to, but I'm fully loyal. fully there.
You're fully invested. I mean, that's very profound, my friend. That's good. Yeah. Pete's question actually raises something which I'm kind of glad we're diving into, because it is something we've discussed in the podcast in the past, and it is something that is really interesting because his point's valid, which is on a regular basis for as long as I can remember now, we as a team are inconsistent. And that is regardless of managers, regardless of the squad. I think the only we had two seasons under that Chelsea Lemon nonce, who basically we were surprisingly consistent in the league for those two seasons. You know, undefeated at White Hart Lane for a whole year. I mean, that's just mind blowing now when you think about it. And just generally, we had a couple of seasons. We finished third and second. We were incredibly consistent, and I felt every single game we played, we could win. Regardless of who we were playing, where we were playing them, I felt very confident in how we were doing. Now, it's worth pointing out that those two seasons came in that particular manager's second and third seasons at the club. Not in his first. In his first, he very nearly got fired twice because we were inconsistent and all over the place. What he was doing in that first season was trying to create a style, a system, and trying to change the squad dramatically. If you remember, he inherited a squad with the likes of Cabal as captain. And everyone forgets Cabal was his first captain, but he was. You had Soldado. You had players, and I think Adebayor was still there. You had Aaron Lennon telling him, I don't have to train double because I'll be here longer than you will, you know, and stuff like that. You had a lot in that first
season. That story always upsets me because I loved Aaron Lennon, and that story just makes me go, you tall.
you can have a bad day, everyone. And in his defence, what he was saying seemed pretty accurate at that particular moment.
Yeah, Fair point. Yeah.
And, you know, he was suffering a bit himself, which no one knew at the time. So there is a lot. There is a lot that had to happen in that first season. The emergence of a certain academy striker, Arsenal fan, I think, came through, really helped him. But it just kind of everyone sort of forgets that first season because of what came after being such an incredible turnaround. I remember the summer between season one and season two when the rumor we were trying to sign a defensive midfielder. And if you remember, the most sought-after defensive midfielder in that moment was a guy called Morgan Schneiderlin. Do you remember?
Yes.
And we were linked heavily, and we were linked constantly with this guy. And then he went
Southampton, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think he went to Man United or didn't move that summer anyway, because we couldn't agree a price. And then all of a sudden, there was this rumour that Eric Dyer was going to become our defensive midfielder, and people lost their freaking minds. Like, you know, this is awful, typical Tottenham, they got no ambition. I just remember it being crazy. And then if you look back on that season, Eric Dyer was probably one of the best players in Europe, genuinely.
It was phenomenal.
He did a role in that season where he covered the two fullbacks who were mauled in constantly. He broke up play constantly. It was incredible. To the point that then, you know, United tried to sign him for 40 million. We had all sorts of offers. And, like, whatever happened beyond that point, no one should forget the impact he had on that team that pushed Leicester that season.
Yep. So,
what I'm getting to with this in a roundabout way, heading back to what Pete's point is, it is a really valid question to ask. Those two seasons aside, you can go through various managers, including that particular manager at the start of his spell and then at the end, when that team sort of fell off, where we are terribly inconsistent. And if you look at the Fulham game now, I believe, and it's purely my opinion, that we had a squad of players who have all had international call-ups, look at that Fulham fixture and just think they had to show up, and their minds were on what they were doing next. That is the that is the only thing I can wrap my head around, because there is no way Ange and his coaching team approach that any differently to any other fixture. You can tell that from the way he is, and certainly the way he reacted to that game, and also, you know, the coaching staff and the way they are. So it is definitely,
he wouldn't have turned up and gone, easy game, lads.
No,
he wouldn't have done that.
No, not at all. Like, you know, don't worry about it, guys. We'll just get this one done. Then you can all, you know, pop off to your countries. No problem. I think it was a collective, you know, not even a conscious thing. I'm not saying that they all like sat around and went, hey, it's all right. Just make sure we don't get injured because I want to go play for England or I want to go play for Argentina or anything like that. Because probably one of the few players who really got stuck in was Romero early on. And I was kind of looking at that thinking, it's funny because a while ago we were all like, for him, Argentina over Tottenham. Which, look, I can't, this is one of those things, I can't overly blame anyone for that. If you're playing for your country and you're proud of your country, you're going to want to represent your country at a World Cup.
It's the whole thing, isn't it? Playing for your country should be like the absolute pinnacle of your career.
Agreed.
To be one of the, I don't know, let's say the size of the squad, let's say one of the three or four best players for your country in that position to get the call up. That should be the honour, the pinnacle, not something you should ever turn down.
No,
don't want to get injured for it. I understand that. However,
Now this is the thing. That's how it looked to me. Now, I could be completely wrong, but that's how it looked. So how do you eradicate that? And also, it is the feeling, the term that we all hate, the Spursy thing, but it is that. It is to win 4-0 at Aston Villa and it be our best performance of the season, where it was complete Ange ball. We titled this podcast Ange Ball is Back because that was peak, that was great. To then go and play Fulham and not even put in the effort. You know, I think it's what Ange said afterwards, which I think absolutely nailed it, is we've lost games this season, but this is the first game I felt let down. It's like we've lost games, but we've tried to play our football. We've tried to, like today, there was nothing. There was no, like the bare minimum is you work hard. That is your baseline bare minimum, and that wasn't there. And that's awful. And he's right, and he's nailed it. And a lot of the players have come out and even issued apologies. Vicario, Romero, Son immediately took to social media and their interviews to apologise to say this was not good enough.
Which is kind of annoying, because Vicario seems to be one of the few players that actually did.
He is a very, yeah. I mean, and but that is often the way. And look, you can collectively have a very bad day and everybody look at each other and just be like, you know, what the happened? And from from our point of view, or at least from my point of view, I can accept a bad day happening if the next game we show a reaction to it. Because, you know, I think everybody can accept, that was a bad day. Because it happens. You know, I watched Man City lose this season, like, and I'm looking at it like, what the fuck? How? Hey, I've got a mate who's a Man City fan, right? I say a mate, he's someone who works with me. And he's really funny because he found out I was a Tottenham fan for the first time recently, and he went, oh, I hate you. And I went, what? He said, I've been to like countless live games, everything like that. He said, the only team I will not go and watch us play is your lot. He said, because we just never, he said, I've watched us play against like Barcelona, Bayern Munich, AC Milan, Juventus, and just play them off the park. He said, then we show up at your crappy, beautiful stadium with your crappy, beautiful amenities. And he's like, and I'm sat there waiting for us to dominate. And we're like, oh, look at that great football we played. It's 1-0 Tottenham. How did that happen?
Yep.
And I was like, yeah, I know. But just hearing that perspective from a Man City fan,
we sit there going, how is it 1-0?
Yeah. I was like, we have no idea how we've kept doing that to you lot. Like, we really don't. I also brought
up VAR. It's been a couple of years now. We don't understand.
I brought up VAR with the Champions League as well, and he's still pretty mad about that. Just so everyone's aware, apparently that's a no-go with Man City fan. Funny, right? I know I'm on a tangent. Which part of VAR do you think he's mad about from that game?
Oh. Well, you'd think it'd be their disallowed goal, surely.
He still stands by Llorente handballed it into the net, not his hip. Apparently, that's the thing. Apparently, Man City fans, like, to by the letter of the law, their goal was offside. They understand that, but Llorente scored with his hand. To which I just said, well, yeah. which wound him up even more. But Pete, going back to this original question and just try and finish my point before I bring Steph in to see if he's got anything to add. I think there is a mentality issue within the club. My opinion has not changed on this. It is going to take Ange some serious effort to change it. I think that a particular guy we had before, whose name I won't say, did change that mentality within the squad, and then due to that squad going stale, the bigger club mentality took over, and that's why it fell apart. Now, what I mean by this is, and this isn't me starting to dig people out, this isn't me opening a wider conversation, but as a club, there is a certain level of, we don't actually expect to win things in the hierarchy. The hierarchy at Tottenham Hotspur, the ownership can say, we're in this to win. All they want, none of their actions ever support that. There are countless opportunities we have had to kick on, which would have involved investment in a certain area at any time, and they've not done it. The season we finished to Leicester, that season, we could have signed Wilfred Zaha at the start of it for £40 million. We then spent that £40 million on 3 players who made a total 11 appearances for us. Zaha, genuinely, in that season, contributed to like 20 goals for his club.
Yep.
And if he, and we drew too many games that year. I think we drew like 11 games. He would have needed
one player to make a game-changing moment.
I think someone did this analysis once, and they were basically just saying that 3 of those draws to wins and 1 of the defeats to a draw, we win. We win the title. Because 2 of those draws were Leicester. And they're like, this literally, you know, those are 2 6-point game swings. And all Tottenham were lacking was just that one player. Like, because they had it. They had Mahrez. That was what they had. Now, Vardy was a goal machine, so was Kane. But they had Mahrez, and we didn't have that. We didn't have that X factor where Mahrez was winning them games or drawing them games out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So, and that's the difference. And but there's countless examples of that. And unfortunately, I believe the mentality of, oh, as long as we're up there, as long as we're up there and we're in, hey, look, if you're making the Champions League, that's, you know, brilliant. That's good sponsors. That's good money. That is where...
Is that holding quotations challenging?
Yeah.
Oh, look, we're up the top, so therefore we must be challenging for the title if we're in the top four.
Yeah.
So no, there's like a 30-point difference. Yeah. We're not challenging for the title. We're challenging
for top four, which Ange again has said in his post match where he said like that isn't good enough. Like that isn't what we should be aiming for. He said I'm fed up of that question. He said I'm fed up of you putting it to me. Why would I be aiming for fourth place? Who starts a race aiming for fourth? He's like, you know, you wouldn't go to a sprinter and say, you know, are you aiming for third? You don't. You're aiming to win. And he's like, and that needs to change. And he's absolutely right. And it does need to change. Now, he can change that within this squad. He can get this squad firing and aiming to win stuff like that other guy did. But the whole club also needs to change because you need to have from the directors down. Now, look. I hate Chelsea with a passion. I almost hate them to the point I hate Arsenal, if not more in some ways. And I think Roman Abramovich used the stolen funds of a nation to bankroll a football club as his plaything. I think it's unbelievably corrupt. All of that stuff, throw it to one side for a moment. We all know it. At Chelsea, under Roman Abramovich, no one was under any illusions that if you didn't win, you were gone. It didn't matter how much money you were signed for. It didn't matter how much money per week was on your contract as a manager. If you stopped winning, you were gone because it was about winning.
Yeah.
There was
some of the players that they turned over, some of the managers they turned over.
There was no chance anyone... He even, at one point, under Jose, was dominating English football and was starting to dominate European football. But he looked at it and went, I'm not enjoying watching this, and sacked him.
Yeah.
The guy was ruthless. The guy was, and he would try things. He'd say, like, okay, I'm going to bring this guy in. He's younger. He wants to play attacking football. Okay, yeah, we won a few games, but we lost a few. Didn't like that. Bang, he's gone. Right, now I'll bring in somebody else, right? And they kept winning trophies. Chelsea were a trophy-winning machine under Roman, but there was no continuity. There was no one manager that stayed there for the 10 years, no Ferguson, no Wenger type, who just came in and built and created a legacy, no Klopp, no Guardiola. It was a constant changing machine based on an ethos within the club, and that ethos was we win or we're done. Because he will bomb us out. It doesn't matter who we are, how much money we've been signed for, how much money we're on. This club will kick us to the curb if we are not winning. So that meant...
I mean, Crack, I remember under him where, like, you'd have a summer transfer window.
Yeah.
And you'd see, like, half the squad change because a new manager's come in and the manager's literally gone, they don't know my system.
Yeah.
Oh, they're gone. Okay, new one's in.
Yeah. And then if that manager didn't work out...
Yeah, and we've still got players that are here, like, you know, five managers ago.
And you're absolutely right. And that's
crazy.
But so for all the criticisms and all the stuff, the illegality and all the financial stuff, which we can look at and go, all of that was wrong. The one thing that he did at that football club is that from the very top, there was no misunderstanding of anyone who was ever signed of, you are here to win or you are gone. This is the mentality of this football club. And when it comes to Tottenham, it feels like the mentality of this football club is, now, if you can make the top four and you can get us in the Champions League, that'd be really nice. That extra money, oh, that'd be lovely.
Yeah.
And there's no one there driving it. Because you can put press statements out at the end and the start of every season saying, our ambition as owners is to win trophies, but it's not easy. All you want. You have to create the atmosphere. You have to instill it in everybody from the top down. And if you think about the players that are in our squad that shouldn't be and how long they've lingered, how disenchanted they must be and how that has an impact on everybody. Because everybody around is like, oh my God, is really Tanguy's coming back again? Like that, yeah. Why is that guy still here? If he was at Chelsea, they'd have just sold him to someone for like 3 million quid. Just
terminate his contract. Just keep get him out
paying
the door.
Your wages to go play for another club, but you are not coming back to our dressing room. Now, I know we've been loaning him out, but it's not the same. The mentality needs to be, we're here to win, so he's gone. We signed him, it didn't work, you're gone.
And it didn't work,
But if you create that, create that feeling, then when players come in, they know, like, I have got to hit the ground running. I have got to come in and do well, or they'll bomb me out. But there's too much of this kind of like, oh, Sonny didn't do very well in his first year, so we'll give you another year. Oh, well, you know, there was that one game where he did that back heel. That was good, wasn't it? Right, we'll give him another year. It's just... We got to strengthen from the top down to be harder. And I think that's where the mentality issue is in the club. I think it's from the top down. There you go. That's my personal opinion. Anything to add to that one before we move on?
I think you covered it all.
Yeah, sorry.
I think that question is answered.
Corey Birchfield says, I was listening to another podcast. How could he? And they brought up the idea of playing in-season games overseas like the NBA and the NFL are doing. They brought up Tottenham as a potential team to do this due to the connection with the NFL. Could there be any legs to this? I don't know if they could pull this off the way the scheduling works in the Premier League. I know both leagues are doing it for a money grab and a grow the game league. What are your thoughts? That's actually been proposed in the past.
And, a few times, yeah.
And it got... Yeah, no. Yeah, it got really kind of tore into... I think the Premier League would do it in a heartbeat. I think genuinely. Oh, I think they would do a... Asia leg, an Australia leg, an America, a US leg, and they
Who's
would...
Who's paying money? We'll go there. Yeah.
They would do it in a frigging heartbeat to keep the thing going and to try and increase their revenue, because, of course, that's all they care about.
You can imagine the Riyadh season for the boxing. You'd end up with a football version as well, wouldn't you?
Oh, don't, mate. But yeah, without a doubt, they'll be in Qatar within minutes. Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
Today, live from Saudi Arabia, it's the Manchester Derby. What? I think they do in a hurry. When they proposed it before, which was a good few years ago now, the fan reaction in this country was so strong and so united. Because this is the thing. When football fans all get on the same page, like all the tribalism vanishes, they all agree on a subject, it is quite powerful. Like the European Super League was a no. That was a nope across all the fan bases, and they all backtracked fast. Like that leaked, and by the afternoon they were going, oh, did we say we're doing that? We've changed our mind.
No, we said we'd look at it.
Yeah, jeez. didn't realise you'd all be that angry. Bloody hell. So when football fans get on the same page and an issue like that is one that, it's difficult. Now, off the back of that idea, years ago, there was a thing that was created called the International Series, which was a pre-season tournament. Which took Premier League teams all around the world playing each other, and they'd play in all these different countries, the pre-season friendlies, and they made good money out of it, and everyone made good money out of it, but they weren't regular season games. I think that will continue. I think the Premier League will no doubt at some point try and bring the discussions back, but in the UK right now, fans, due to government legislation, are about to be given real... power, almost a real say, providing it goes through, of course. And if that happens
today, isn't it? Yeah, today it gets done.
Yeah, so if that happens, I cannot see at all them ever being able to do it for regular season games. But who knows? it's a very strange world we live in. Next up is Ryan Miller. He says, is there any update on Solomon's injury? Would be good to have another attacking option from the bench.
Now there's a player I forgot we signed.
Manor
Solomon.
Him and Ryan Sessegnon are winning the hide and seek championship for this year.
I do feel sorry for him because he actually hit the ground running, literally. Like, he was looking pretty good for us when we first signed him.
Would you like the update as we're given, or would you like the conspiracy theory?
Oh, update as we're given first, because this always makes me chuckle with our medical team.
Okay, so
he's stubbed his toe. He'll be out for 2 weeks.
Yeah, so the update is he obviously had an injury. You've been carrying it for some time. The club, and quite rightly, they always try and put the health of the individual first. And obviously, a surgery needs to be your last resort. So the club have done various rehab things, and then he did have surgery. That he's then come back from that and done the rehab phase, but he still feels really uncomfortable. He then had another minor surgery because they believed that perhaps some of the stitching internally and stuff like that was still irritating. It wasn't like he was in pain, but he just didn't feel right. So they've done that, they've cleaned it up, he's then done the rehab phase again, and he's still not feeling right. Now, whether that means that the operation hasn't been a success, whether that means that there is actually another issue, because sometimes when you're coming back, you can pick up all sorts of muscle and sort of, little niggly things.
Yeah.
So he basically is still going through this thing. And as Ange said in his latest update for him, is like, he just doesn't feel right. So we're trying to explore why. So really, there's no update on that. Really, it's just really vague. Really kind of, he's struggling, but we don't know.
Massively vague, isn't it? Yeah.
Which, of course, opens up the door to the Tinfoil Hat Brigade.
I love it. Yeah.
And we have a theory that actually he isn't injured. He's enlisted in the IDF and is currently fighting in Gaza.
Jesus Christ.
I can't even make that up. That is genuinely something that is flying around right now.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. Yeah, and not just like one guy saying it. It's like, oh, clearly he enlisted because he was there when it all started, and we were seeing like his social media posts and stuff. And yeah, clearly that's where he is, and the club are just covering it up.
The fact
he was at Hotspur Way last week and he was in a picture. I mean, that doesn't matter. I mean, that could be a lookalike. Yeah, the club.
He flew back for the weekend.
Have you seen all the shit about Kate Middleton?
Gosh, yeah.
All the freaking fear is like, that's not her. That's a body double. Clearly, Man of Solomon, the club have brought in like a body double. Forget the fact that the body double is like 6'4" or something. It's like, yeah, it's him. Honest. That's Brandon Austin, isn't it? No, it's Man of Solomon. Honest. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
Right, so there we go. Ryan, I hope that answers your question and you enjoyed the mental answer as much as I did. Mark Corder says, is there something wrong with the club's DNA? We have had great players, expensive players, top managers, and opportunities to push on to achieve things, but it gets messed up every time. For the best part of the last 20 to 30 years, everything changes and yet everything stays the same. Mark, I think I've kind of answered this in the first question. My opinion is, yeah, there is a bit of an issue. It's from the top down. Steph,
yeah.
Do you think we've answered that, or do you want to jump in?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think this whole, we've heard the saying, the whole profits before glory so many times.
Yeah.
I think that's where it comes from. It's coming from the top.
Yeah.
We're challenging. Yay. No, we're not challenging. No. We're just kind of doing what we do. There's no expectation or pressure from the club to do more.
There was a feeling within that squad for those 2 years that we were challenging, and then that dropped off a cliff. And I think.
And then we went, what, 3 or 4 transfer windows without a signing.
Yeah.
And wondered what happened.
Yeah. Why is it this squad seems stale? Why is it that they all seem to be feeling really confident in their positions and aren't trying as hard anymore? This is so weird. Yeah, I know. Finally, from Facebook, Tom Perk says, assuming we play 4-2-3-1 and everyone is fit, who is your preferred front four, and do you think Ange knows his?
Oh,
there you go. I'm going to hand that to you. That's very much a you question.
Thanks.
Welcome,
do you know what? For me, Madison as the number 10 is the obvious. Sonny playing the number 9 up front. I want to see Kulusevski over on the left.
On the left?
on the left.
Okay.
I want to see, he has got such an ability, but for some reason, I'm like, I just want to see him over there.
Okay.
And then I want to have, see, now everyone knows on this podcast, I am a massive fan of Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah. You like Johnson. However,
I actually want to see someone like Werner playing on the right.
Wow. So what you've done there, I think, interestingly,
Johnson
to
is
me.
A fantastic player. However, Johnson off the bench looks such a better player than a Johnson that starts. Okay. You kind of want to BJ halfway through, not from the start. That's what I've realised. Yeah.
I think it's important to know, does Ange know? Ange doesn't play 4-2-3-1. That's important straight away. Ange plays 4-3-3. So does he know his front three? Absolutely he does. Do they always perform to the level you'd like them to? No, that's why he has options. That's why you want to keep the squad options. That's why a guy like Werner can come in and play nine or out wide. It's why Johnson can do the same. It's why Sonny can do the same. It's why Richie can do the same. So he can alternate it and they can alternate.
I mean, even Kulusevski can play 10 either wing or up front if needed. Yeah. And we've seen him play as a number 8 quite well.
Yeah. If you dominate the ball.
There are options there.
Yeah, there's options all over the place, and he's trying to build that out and trying to improve it, because you can have the option to play places, but then you also need the confidence to play your game when you're doing it. So, okay, so we're going to head over to Instagram now with our one message we've had in there. Thanks to lovely Laura for sending it to us. And it's from this man.
Now it's time for a comment from my own brother.
There you go, that cheers everyone up. Oh, I want a beat somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. I feel loads better. Thanks for messaging in, Island Brother. He says,
I love that.
Hello, Spurs News team. I see we will never fail to take the opportunity to fail. Yeah. Didn't think we would get turned over by Fulham, but there we have it. Spurs life. Here is my question. I have noticed there is an increasing sentiment among Spurs supporters that they would welcome Saudi investment if it allowed Spurs a period of dominance. What are each of your personal thoughts on this prospect of a Middle Eastern takeover? Hope all are well, and to Laura, I hope your fiancé has forgiven you after being insufferable when we won last week. Yeah, that's well worth remembering, everybody, is that lovely Laura is engaged to an Aston Villa fan who was at the game. He went to the game to watch Tottenham, his fiancé's team, batter his team 4-0. And yeah, the Laura Derby, we call it whenever it's Tottenham.
That must have been the most awkward meal at the dinner
table. I really hope all she did when he got home was just smile. You don't even have to say anything. I hope she put on a Spurs shirt and just walked around like, yeah, what? What's wrong? What's going on?
Just wear absolutely nothing but a Spurs.
No, hold on. Come on now. House. Come on. I'm keeping it clean.
For a website, isn't it? Sorry.
We don't have to talk about our OnlyFans all the time where it's called but a Tottenham shirt. That cut off one that just covers it anyway. So she, if it had been me, I'd have just been like, do you know what? I've been so busy. What was the score? I'd been awful.
The house is spotless. Yeah. I've been really busy cleaning. I forgot that was today.
I've been so busy. I've just been doing stuff around the house. What was the score in the end? Oh, I bet you lot won because you're so much better than us, aren't you? I mean, she probably wouldn't be getting married anymore, so it's probably a good idea she didn't do that. So Island Brother, your question. That's awkward. would I welcome...
You know that Paddy Power, there's a Paddy Power, other betting sites available.
Yeah.
Advert. And the advert's like, you know, we don't want their money, we've got our own, we've got morals, we've
and
got
then
this.
It happens and they all
he
cheer.
Bursts in the door. Yeah, we're in the money. That I think is what would happen to 95% of Tottenham fans.
Maybe.
I think we all sit there at the moment going, yeah, but it's dirty money and it's a bit corrupt. It's a bit like, you know, I'd rather play the Tottenham way and, you know, carry on as we are instead of having all that, you know, just throw players and money at it. Oh, yeah. Tomorrow we get brought out by someone and I guarantee you, like, yeah, about 91% of those people go, Hold up.
So here's a weird thing, okay? And every year, now I'm going to say this on the podcast now, so all the people listening to this podcast are going to be in on this. And the people who don't aren't, and so you can be in on the joke, okay?
Okay.
Every single year, I do an April Fool's Day joke on our Facebook page.
You do?
And every single year, I get a lot of... Yeah, of course. Well, I'm not going to this year, okay? You're going to be part of it this year. But every year, I've managed to catch people out to the point that on at least two occasions, I've made the press. Like, the rumour, like, people have copied and shared what I've written to the point that people in journalism have had to write up to say and deny things and say, no, this isn't true. Well, no, of course it's not true, because the last sentence, which everyone doesn't read to, says it's an April Fool's Day joke. And I do it every year, and I write it. This is an April Fool's Day joke. But no one reads to the bottom. They start reading, they see it's in a kind of, oh, this seems legit, and off they go sharing stuff. Off they go.
Get that half, you know, to three quarters of the way down, going, oh,
copy,
my God.
Copy and paste to their forum, copy and paste to Twitter, wherever they go, and the rumours run off. And it's funny to me. But, so I've written one for this year, right?
Yeah.
Now, is anyone who's... Tottenham fan will know there's been this big thing online recently about the South Korean fans at the stadium, and there's been this real issue over it. Now I think this is pathetic and I don't like it, and Ange even came out and said I love the term plastic, you know, tourist fans, because that would be me, you know, I give up anything, and to be critical of people who are traveling around all this anyway, look, that's a different argument. I thought it would be funny if this year I wrote a piece that Tottenham were being bought into by a South Korean billionaire. Because that kind of ties everything in. It seems almost kind of logical as well, doesn't it? Considering our thing.
Yeah.
And what is funny, right, and almost just serendipitous about this, is I then have to Google South Korean billionaires. I don't know any of them. I don't know. And there's a list of like 20, and there's one there, and it says he made his money from being in tech and gaming. And I thought, oh, perfect, I'll pick him. When I've loaded him to like get the correct spelling of his name and to get a bit of info to try and make this seem legit, it says in bullet points about him, Tottenham Hotspur fan.
No joke.
Absolute no joke. So anyone who reads the first couple of lines in this and Googles the guy is one of the first things they're going to see. And I was like, this is beautiful. This is going to work great. So I've written this up, and I've written it like this, you know, he's investing money and it's going to open up 300 million for player transfers and all this. I've written this whole thing, and it says right at the bottom line, if you're still reading this, how gullible are you? It's an April Fool's Day joke. Check the date. No one's going to read down that. A lot of people aren't going to read down that far. And those that do are going to get to that point and then write, oh, you bastard, you got me. And lots of people are just going to say, look, check the date. And that's great. And I like that. I like that people are, you know, I mean, people should treat stuff they read online like that every day of the year, by the way, not just April Fool's Day. But so, yeah, there you go. If you're listening to this podcast on April 1st.
You should add a part in there where it's like, as part of the deal, he's naming this stand the just to watch the fans go.
This is the thing. I try and write these things like they are as legit as possible. Because the one I did that fell flat was I made the mistake. I can't remember which one it was. It was something along the lines of the club were being renamed after the founder, and from next season we were getting rid of Tottenham in the name because we were going to try and move out of the area. But back when, you know, it was like we might buy the Olympic Stadium. And I was like, yeah, so we're actually going to be called Harry Hotspurs from this date, which is that Pratt blogger idiot. Yeah, no one bought that. that was unanimous. Shut up. Yeah. I've tried to do just zany things. I did that zany thing off the back of the one the year before, convinced so many people. And there were two press articles, including it made the Daily Star online. And I was just like, oh, wow, this is... I possibly shouldn't do this. And that one was Robert Kraft, the owner of the new Patriots in the USA, was buying us.
Yep.
Yeah, everyone bought that.
No, I remember that one, you bastard.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, everyone bought into that. So anyway, so yeah, if you're a listener, so this brings back to the question, Island Brother. It's funny how perception is one of these things. If an American billionaire who says, "I just want, I love football. I've been a Tottenham fan my entire life," wants to buy the club, no one's going to care. If a South Korean billionaire with the same thing says it. The money coming from the Saudi leagues and stuff like that, there is a real stigma attached to it, which isn't attached to money from other places. And in my humble opinion, if you're a billionaire, there's some money there that's been made. Rarely do billionaires get there being really nice, you know.
No, yeah.
Oh, see that billionaire over there? He's such a nice guy. He built his business not stomping on anybody. He's just lovely. Oh, great guy. Like, you know, you only got to look at Bill Gates, the world's biggest nerd, basically destroyed anyone who was building anything in competition to him. Like, literally, there's stories about, you know, offices being smashed under his kind of, like, some sort of nerdy mafia don and stuff. It's
okay, because he now donates a lot to charity.
he's
now trying to counteract.
Yeah, it's almost like he's trying to sort his karmic slate out. Yeah. But yeah, there's very few billionaires out there you look at and go, "Oh, isn't that nice? He made all that money, you know, selling stuff to poor people."
Yeah.
Did he? Or did he use poor people to make the stuff to sell it to the rich people? That's probably more likely.
Well, yes.
So anyway, so it's one of those things. I find it difficult, but I tell you, just to round this off and just to give us this topic a little bit, we as a football club in the English Premier League are actually in the A1 position for anybody around the world right now looking to acquire a Premier League football club. Now, there's one downside to that to everybody, and they know this. And that is Enoch and Daniel Levy will not sell easy. And what I mean by that is they are not going to undercut the value that they put on the club. They have a valuation in mind, and that's it. And they'll sell it for that value. They've made it clear for years. Like, yeah, if someone comes in and hits our valuation, layers, we're gone.
Yeah.
But they have to hit that valuation. Now, what is intriguing... sorry, mate, just to finish my thought on this. You look at the people who have bought Newcastle United. They have got more money than the owners of Manchester City by a landslide. So why aren't they spending it?
Because FFP.
Of the because of the rules.
Yeah.
They are restricted by the revenue and everything of Newcastle United. So their whole goal now is to build that to the point they can spend the money. Now, Man City got around that, but there's currently 100+ charges against them, which is an ongoing thing.
How,
so if you're
how well they got around
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so if you're Newcastle, you're currently sat just watching that, aren't you? Just see how that case goes, because if they get away with it, open season.
If it all gets dropped, you can imagine the spending spree Newcastle.
Yeah, if
go
that
on.
Gets dropped, basically Newcastle next season are sponsored by the Prince of Wherever for $14 billion a year. On their shirt, and their shirt's literally just a picture of their owner with like his thumb up, like I got away with that, or just like a money symbol. Yeah, it's just got a pound symbol on their shirt. That's it. And then and their squad suddenly, you know, goes through crazy transformation. But if you look at Tottenham with the FFP situation they've got, we can actually spend per window based on our income, revenue, and everything up to $200 million without breaking a sweat. We can actually go to $300 million and make the calculated loss over 3 years, which we probably wouldn't if we were still keeping the same sort of league position we're in, etc. So
add into that selling off players that are no longer required to challenge
it. Yeah. So if you were looking to buy a Premier League team and you were someone that you're like, I want to buy a team and I want to take, you know, I want to skyrocket, I want to create a club and a dynasty, the team that you're looking at right now in the Premier League would be Tottenham. Because of the revenue stream. The other club you'd have looked at was Manchester United, and that's why they've just been sold. That's why someone has just done that. Because Manchester United have such a massive revenue stream. Again,
25% or whatever it is.
Yeah, you can go crazy. But the owners who have just bought them aren't the kind of Saudi crazy billionaires. They're just regular billionaires.
Regular crazy billionaires.
They're not the trillionaires. So It is an interesting thing of would it happen, could it happen? I have no idea. Our owners are quite happy to kick back. I mean, they bought the club for circa 200 million. The club has self-funded everything that's happened. So that initial investment is just that. They've then put in an additional 100 million, which only 50 million has been drawn down. So if you work on the theory that Enoch in total is 300 million in for this investment, and the club current value is anywhere between 2 and 3 billion, at some point when they sell, that's a long-term investment over 20-something years they've made pretty good money on.
Oh, mate, I wish I could find a savings account like I had that sort of interest rate.
Yeah, tell me about it. Money makes money, brother.
Oh, didn't it just?
So, as I promised, Fulham 3, Tottenham 0. I watched this game in pain, basically, just watching it, unbelieving how poor we were. I genuinely feared it was going to be worse than 3-0. When the third goal went in, I think I even put in our chat, this could get worse. Like, we are not there at all. We are all over the place. Our midfield basically looked like they didn't show up. Like, I'm not convinced we actually put 11 players on the pitch, and I think our midfield was what was missing. I saw no evidence of them. Fulham just had the run of the pitch all day.
We haven't seen from this team before, just no. To kind of capitulate themselves like this. This is something that, like, we as Spurs fans all thought we had seen the end of this.
Yeah, big time.
We thought this is not a mentality that we have anymore.
No, at no point.
Now, I only saw like extended highlights. I've seen a few different extended highlights.
Yeah.
So I've seen a fair bit of the match, and I wish I hadn't.
Yeah.
But like there was just nothing that we now associate with Ange Ball or with a possibly sort of team. There was just none of it at all. People were getting run off.
Yeah.
There was a couple of occasions that I saw our fullbacks, and the player went past the fullback, and they kind of just went, "Your job."
It was very strange.
Over to you.
It was a very very strange.
We haven't seen that.
It was timid. It was lack of effort. Someone summed it up brilliantly with the expression, and apologies if I'm butchering this, but it was hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. Thought, yeah, that nails it. You know, they showed up, in my opinion, thinking we got this. Fulham showed up like it was a London derby, like a game they wanted to win in front of their fans. And they did. And they played brilliantly, and they sent their fans home happy. I don't think we need to analyse it more than just going, that was awful. Let's put that to bed. I think
what I want to say is I hated the fact that the toxic Spurs fans were out in force afterwards, and some of the stuff I've seen aimed at players, like trying to scapegoat players already. And I'm like, Radu on his first start has basically already been written off as a wasted signing start. And it's like, it's crazy.
Mate, we saw, we discussed last week, the online and modern football fandom is reactionary to a quite toxic point. Like we all have moments where like, oh, for fuck, you know, we all kind of have that. And we have our group chat, and sometimes we all go off on that a little bit on different things. And then you kind of, you know, you take a minute and you go, oh, yeah, you know, it's one of those days. And the thing that social media gives is every prat a voice. And unfortunately, with Twitter especially, a lot of prats now have a little blue tick that they've paid for, and you can make money from engagement. So they are actually typing stuff to wind fellow fans up, because the engagement and the retweets is actually earning them a few pennies. And it isn't a lot of money, but it makes them feel, you know, like their micro penis is growing. But I mean, I read all of it. I read everything from Ange's too fat to be a manager in the Premier League. I mean, I don't know what fucking planet you are coming out with shit like that. Radu Dragosin was awful, was the worst player we've ever played, worst defender I've ever seen. I mean, what? Fuck.
We had Gilberto and, you know, Park Ji-sung at the back. Or whoever it was. Lee Young Pyo, wasn't it? Yeah. But we have had bad defenders, like, trust me.
You got no. Where has that come from? That's just absolute nonsense. So when it is that nonsensical, I just ignore it. When I see people digging stuff out personally, like really laying in the people, that's what winds me up. Like the stuff that was written about Brennan Johnson. You know, you've got players in the Tottenham squad who have had to make their social media presence private because of what Tottenham fans have said to them. You see players at other clubs sharing like, you know, I've had this racist comment come in from fans of the team we just played, and they share that. Our players are having to block Tottenham fans. And I think at this point, someone needs to look at that and just, someone actually needs to call our fan base out. It's called a supporter. You support your team. We all have opinions on players and we all discuss it, but discuss it in a way that isn't, you know, saying, there's another thing, tagging the players, tagging them in your post, ripping them a new one. And I saw someone say, oh, like it matters. It doesn't, it's just their social media team reading it anyway. Well, one, if you believe that, why are you tagging them? What are you trying to prove if you genuinely think they'll never see it? But two, you want them to see it. If you are tagging them, you are hoping that someone in their team or they read it. How many more examples do you need of players shutting off their social media or players actually coming out and saying, oh, I read this stuff. I read it all. Yeah. There are countless examples in the current squad of them saying that. And there's examples of players who have left over and over again. It gets to the point that day Eric Dyer jumped in the stands to chin one of the fans. I'm starting to wonder how that doesn't happen every week.
But how long had that been building up and he got an opportunity?
I just genuinely think that the lack of consequence for the shit you can say online leads people to say stuff that they would never say to someone's face. And if you are someone who would say some of this stuff to someone's face, then you really need to look at yourself. Because it's awful, some of it really is. So that's the Fulham game. I think we can write that off. I think we, as a fandom, need to shake that off. As a team, they need to shake that off. And my hope, obviously my hope, is our next game, which is the 30th of March. There's an international break now, so our next game, not till the 30th, is at home against Luton. If we go out in that game, play Ange ball, smash him off the park, then I think everyone can just go, ugh, okay, shake that off. That was a really bad day. If we go out and really struggle, if we go out against them, they do a low block and the football's, you know, poor, we're not looking sharp, I worry how bad the reaction's going to be. Because it needs a reaction. Like, I generally am saying, I'm a fairly level-headed football fan. I don't dive in on stuff. I don't go over the top with criticism. I'll call things out. I'll say, I don't think so-and-so's playing well. I don't think they maybe fit the system and stuff like that. That's just my opinion. I don't go overboard ever. But I am saying, if we show up that lackluster again, you do have to then go, why? What's going on? Why are we that poor? But yeah, that's just my opinion.
What's going on internally to make this happen? I'm kind of frustrated that we've got an international break now, because you kind of want to see that reaction straight away.
Agreed.
But again, though, my other concern at the moment is we do dominate Leicester. We beat them 6-0 and play like amazing Ange ball, free flowing. It's great.
Luton.
And then Luton, sorry. We dominate them. We beat them 6-0. We go to the next game and we do what we did against Fulham. How great we can be.
Yeah.
And take the foot off. And it's like, stop taking the foot off the bloody accelerator. Well,
This is my point. That Fulham game needs to be a learning curve. It needs to be, okay, that was awful. That was the biggest low we've had. Do you lot want to feel that way again? No. Then we do not let that happen. You know, Ange, do not stop. Stop passing it back. These things that he's trying to drive into them, that message needs to be louder and clearer than ever right now. Because when you stop, when you don't play the football you need to play, that's when you lose a game like that. And you're right. Smashing Luton doesn't fix it. You need to win. You need to play this way going forward. But smashing Luton would be a really good start.
Be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah.
That is everything for the show this week. We will be, because it's the internationals, we won't be here next week, but we'll be back the following. So thank you to everybody for continuing to listen. Apologies for the haphazard for a while, but we are back and we are rolling again now. But like I said, international break, so there will be no Spurs News podcast next week because there's nothing to talk about unless something mad happens. So
yeah,
with this football club, sometimes, like, you know, we could get to like next week and it's like, actually, we have a lot to talk about ever since the rumours that Daniel Levy's murdered Kate Middleton approach, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Which I say purely as a joke. No one clip that. See? Tinfoil Hat Brigade. We knew it!
We can have the government knocking on our door.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. There was a black helicopter hovering and a guy abseiling outside my house. Hello! Right. So anyway, big thank you to everybody for listening. Hopefully we've managed to cheer you up a little bit. Hello, darkness, my old friend. Yeah. It's cheered me up a bit. I feel a bit better for getting some of this out.
I always enjoy our chats. Yeah. It's just nice that other people have to listen as well.
Yeah, poor salt. But anyway, mate, I'll speak to you very soon. I'll speak to everybody listening in 2 weeks. Goodbye from me.
Take care, everyone, and come on, you Spurs.
Thank you for listening to the Spurs News Podcast. We hope that you enjoyed the show. Stay up to date with all things Tottenham. Follow us on social media. All links are in the podcast description.